You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Hide and Cue. I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And the synopsis for tonight's show is Q returns to the Enterprise, testing Commander Riker by giving him the power of the Q. This is the 10th episode of Season 1 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date was the 23rd of November 1987. The episode was written by C.J. Holland and Gene Roddenberry and directed by Cliff Boll. Guest stars tonight are John Delancey reprising his role as Q. So, what do we think about this episode? Now, personally, I like Q, and I like what how Q is threaded throughout the entirety of Star Trek Next Generation, but in my opinion, I think this is the worst episode that he's in. What about you?
I agree with that. But I do need to edit your part about the synopsis. You read it wrong. It says, it's supposed to read, Q returns to the Enterprise, testing Commander Riker by giving him the power of the poo. I think Riker poo-pooed this one big time. I don't really go for him very much either. But
Sorry, I thought you were being serious.
Oh, no.
I'm holding on to him. What did I misread?
I have a half a mind to change that on the wiki, but I won't do that. That would be bad.
Okay, should we get into some feedback from previous shows?
Oh, you're one of those types of like feedback, don't you? Okay, absolutely. But you know something? Before we get into any of the forum feedback, I did get an email from Mike, who's Jarek in our forums, and he did leave some feedback for... Oh, four shows. He left some for The Naked Now, Code of Honor, Last Outpost, and Where No One Has Gone Before. So why don't we go ahead and put that in right here.
Greetings, Lou and James. This is my first feedback since hearing of the sad loss of Brian, and he will be missed. The re-release of his first spot on the Lead Trek show was good listening, as was his ongoing post on other Trekmate shows and his shipwreck selection. A voice from beyond the veil, or a reminder that the best of you lives on in the memories of those who we leave behind. So a few quick thoughts on the recent TNG episodes you have covered, and I've watched for the first time since they were aired by the BBC on their original broadcasts. The Naked Now. I was surprised how good this episode looked, some clever set dressing and costumes. No real issues with building upon the naked time, but it does ask the question why it took so long to solve the problem, and how lax the procedures were for investigating the situation the Enterprise discovered on the Tchaikovsky. Tasha rocked, in more ways than one, but as you mentioned, perhaps knowing more about the characters would have made their aberrant behaviour more rewarding. Wesley really wasn't the high point in the episode. Writing, not performance, but that's already becoming a pattern. Code of Honour. Okay, this episode I wasn't looking forward to, but you know what, it didn't bother me half as much as I expected. The biggest issue is why an organic compound could not be replicated by the Federation or Starfleet Medical. That made no sense at all. The culture on Lijon, however, with its mixture of land and resources being owned by females, but governed by their chosen males, had merit. I had a small issue with why the arrival of the delegation was in a plain cargo bay, or why Yar felt the need to directly intervene with one of the diplomatic party. It served the story, but it was a sloppy plot-driven situation. The Last Outpost. So, the debut of the show's bad guys. Oh dear. The Ferengi came into their own on Deep Space Nine when Armin was given good writing and situations which suited his character's traits. I didn't really buy into the Delphi Ardu 4 trap or the T'Kon Guardian. It had echoes of Arena, but without the style and, dare I say, subtlety. No, I can't. TOS was really subtle. I do like the idea that the galaxy had been home to civilizations that were so far ahead of the Federation, yet had still fallen into myth and history, leaving behind outposts and relics. Where no one has gone before. Now this is what I've been waiting for. I love the Diane Duane novel, The Winter Sky, which has an alien scientist installing a new intergalactic capable drive system in the Enterprise, which opens up a few unexpected avenues for Kirk and company to explore and solve. The novel is compelling, interesting, and asks a few questions about life and its purpose. Alas, when some of the core elements are used to produce an hour of television, so much is lost or changed that we are left with a pale shadow. In many ways, I wish I had read the book after watching the episode all those years ago. So, out of the four episodes, none of which were great, at least The Naked Now was watchable, and Code of Honor had potential under all that guff. Shame about the Ferengi, and for my own part, Where No One Has Gone Before just let me down, both back in the day and when rewatched. That's it, guys. Looking forward to the next episode of the show. Mike from the UK, signing off.
Okay, well, I think first, thanks for the audio feedback. I think it's very very much appreciated when we get these things sent over to us. So thank you to Jarek for that.
Yes, he has another one. I think I have at least one more. I'm not sure. I have to go back through my emails. But thank you, Jarek. I appreciate that. Watchable has potential, and the other two let him down. Yeah, it's about right. He didn't like Wesley. All right, and so just like Jarek said, the last one was Where No One Has Gone Before, and I believe that's where we left off with the forums. So if you're ready, I'll go ahead and do Captain Proton. That was a lovely eulogy for Brian. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate that. He says thanks for sharing that with us. Great intro to the show. You guys never lost steam. I enjoyed listening to the Three Musketeers of Science get going. Oh, I know what that means. That's when you, Mark, and Paul were explaining scientific stuff, right?
I don't think we should be allowed in the same room at the same time.
Oh, yes.
Not without a health warning, at least.
That was funny, though. Bessel functions. I still don't get Bessel. But don't go into it further. It reminded me of an old show from long, long ago on Trekmate Supplemental, where two guys geeked out about science for a couple of hours. That was a good show, too. Relics, Tapestry, and Where No One Has Gone Before Us is a sturdy list, Paul. I love all three of them. I'm with Mark, though. Where No One Has Gone Before would be my choice of episodes to watch.
Okay, and then Mark follows up. He says he's only listened to the first half so far, Lou, but your tribute to Brian was very touching.
Thank you. I wonder how the other half went.
He does come back, by the way.
Oh, he does. Go ahead and do the follow-up.
he wants to come back on after having such a wonderful time. He wants to come back for Q-Who and also for Who Watches the Watchers.
Okay.
So that's what he came back with.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, and Kieran McDuff says, a wonderful heartfelt tribute, Lou. I'm glad you included it. I'm glad this episode was given such praise, as it's always been one of my favorites, too. I like the concept of the Traveler, who just seemed another step beyond how we perceive space and time. I'm just a sucker for messing with that kind of thing, though. If it's beyond human understanding and perception, I love it. Had to agree about the bumping of Wesley to acting ensign was a bit early, though. Six episodes into the series and a boy who wasn't allowed on the bridge at all to begin with is suddenly going to be there all the time. Seems a bit of a stretch. But there always seemed like there was going to make him an integral part, so maybe they did it to get it out of the way as quickly as possible, and this was the best time or the best way to do it. Could have been worse. They could have bumped him after the tractor beam stunt in The Naked Now. Great points on Kaczynski as well. He was brought down a peg, or six, with his meaningless equations, but he seemed to handle it well and get on with it. There's definitely hope for him. If he'd asked for a position on the Enterprise afterward, you could have considered it, unlike in a later episode where Remick actually did. Never mind the conspiracy arc, you're too much of an insert soiree derogatory term of choice here to the crew. In other words, he's too much of a mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
So you think that's an interesting point. Do you think they would have given him a job on the Enterprise?
I think so. I don't think he came across that badly in the end. I think he had a learning arc. He wasn't a bad guy. He was just a guy that happened to be in a in the wrong for part of the episode. Mm. So I don't think it was anything necessarily hostile, or he wasn't necessarily hostile. So I would have been happy with that.
Interesting, because I thought maybe he might be a little too argumentative with everybody.
I mean, I suppose at this point they're still also looking for full-time chief engineer as well.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So you never know. He might have he might have taken Geordi's.
No, I couldn't see that. 6 years of the Forge's chief engineer. No, I don't see that at all.
Okay, so now we've got a large number of small bit and pieces comments, starting with Paul, from who was on the show. He says he doesn't need to say what he thinks about the episode because he was on the podcast, but he does thank you, Lou, for a wonderful tribute to Brian. Well done for being articulate. Well done on being able to articulate your thoughts at such a difficult time. And obviously this is something that's been with us over the last couple of weeks that is still continues, right?
Oh, yeah. It absolutely does. And as we record this, we will be recording our memorial show too, Brian. But at this point, I still don't know what I'm going to say. I don't want to script it. I don't want to write it out. I just want to get on and talk about him. And, that's what I think would be best. So why don't you go ahead and follow up with your comment?
Oh, yeah. I just thank... I thank Mark and Paul for coming on to the show. It was a lot of fun to record. And I also commented, I think, yes, Lou, your tribute to Brian is very moving and very appropriate. And then there's a bit of back and forth with Mark and the medic wanting to come on for Q-Who.
Oh, okay.
Which is a year's time.
Right.
In a year's time in terms of the season's time.
Well... we had two of them on for Where No One Has Gone Before. So why not? Why can't we have them both on? So, Mark and Medic, look for it. I'll go ahead and put those in. Okay. And then Medic 1849 comes back with his own comment to end it with that says, "Very nice tribute to Brian. He was sincere and heartfelt." It was hard to keep myself together for that. I'm still not a big fan of this episode, despite all the good points that are made in the podcast. I came to TNG in the second season, which I thought was pretty good. So I found it hard to watch the first season, as the characters just seemed off to me. I also believe that they promoted Wesley too quickly. 6 episodes in, and they appear to be forcing too much Wesley too quickly on the viewers. I wonder if Gene had anything to do with this, you think? I believe they should have taken the entire first season to develop him. Maybe the viewers would have accepted him more? I never liked the fact that Kanziski was wearing a Starfleet uniform, and even more so when he didn't have a communicator pin and weird rank insignia. I want to comment on that when I'm done. We never saw another specialist wearing a similar uniform, which is going to be my comment in future episodes. So I'm wondering if the writers felt, looking back, it was a mistake. Worf's pet Targ wasn't very vicious looking. Where were the Targs that we saw from Star Trek 3 or Enterprise? Did they really allow Targs on Earth? I hope there was no crossbreeding between Targs and toy poodles. No, it'd be more like Eden.
I like the image of Worf growing up with a pet Targ on Earth. His friends down the road have a pet cat or maybe even a gerbil or something like that. Yeah, and he has his own Targ.
But they compare it to a kitty cat. No, I don't think. I just don't see the kitty cat in the Targ. But anyway, I did like the special effects and thought Chief Argyle was pretty cool too. It would have been interesting to see if the writers were thinking of him being Chief O'Brien of the future. I thought the Traveler was pretty creepy at first, but it came to like the character as the series went on. I don't mean to sound like a season 1 hater. I do like a handful of episodes, more near the end of the season, and would love to come on for Arsenal of Freedom, if it's still available. Yes, it is available, Medic. So yes, but the thing I want to comment on, if I can go back, was I never liked the fact that Kaczynski was wearing a Starfleet uniform, and even more so when he didn't have a communicator pin or weird rank insignia. We never saw another specialist wearing a similar uniform in future episodes. Chief O'Brien. He wasn't a commissioned officer. He was an enlisted man. We see a lot of enlisted men on Voyager as well. They call them crewmen. They don't call them ensigns or anything. They were crewmen. They weren't Starfleet officers. So we actually do see what I believe to be uniforms in future episodes. The rank insignia, well, we have the Maquis, and that was a different rank insignia. Or how about the original series when every person on each ship had a different rank insignia or just a different insignia for the ship. Does that make sense, or am I off?
No, I hear you there. I always found, the issue with Chief O'Brien was that, initially at least, he was lieutenant, full lieutenant, and he had, his two gold pips, and then he got what apparently appeared to be demoted down to a single black pip, and then the little weird thing he got in, I think, season 4 or so in DS9. I also found the Maquis. I never understood why they had the funny pips. Or, the weird kind of parallel ranks. I assume that's just the people that are not Starfleet but are given like a field commission or something like that should be wearing these things. But I found it, I just found it weird that...
Well, if that was the case, then Chakotay should have had regular Starfleet pips because he was a graduate of the Academy and he was a command officer at one point before he went rogue. So, you're right. Why do they have different pips? I don't know. The only thing I could think of is so that way when the guy who wants to kill all the Maquis knows who's Maquis and who's not. Beyond that, there's really no reason to have separated pips.
No, indeed. I thought it may... Probably it's just a device there so that it's clear who was on each of the sides.
Right. Okay, because it turns out Seska wasn't Bajoran anyway, so irrelevant of who's wearing what. Okay, so anyway, thank you guys for the feedback, and of course we will read it, we will put it on the show, just like Mike did, he did an audio feedback, you're welcome to do one as well. So, on to Hyde and Pooh. Hyde and Q. Drama. And we dropped off our Betazoid Mama. How do you like that one?
It seemed to be quite a shoehorned in, right? It was almost as if the writer said, well, we've lost Troy for the week. Well, she can't do the filming, so we'll have to write her out and we'll explicitly mention that she's been dropped off somewhere. To me, people don't necessarily appear in every episode, and to me, there wasn't any reason why the fact that she was missing would be terribly important. So I thought that was a bit weird.
Right.
And then specifically, they do mention that she goes home to Beta Z, and then in the following episode, we meet up with her mum and co in Haven. So I don't know if they were she was arranging that at this point. I don't know.
Well, I think maybe there could have been a few months between the two episodes, for all we know. Could have been a while.
I think that's true. You get 26 episodes a year. A year is supposed to be about a year in real life. So it's every two... on average, you're going to be 2 weeks per episode. being an apologist, I always use that as a way of... recognizing there's not necessarily as much continuity as possible. There's not necessarily continuity between me today and me in 2 weeks' time. So perhaps it's the same on the Enterprise.
Yes, and maybe it's Betazoid tradition that they come back home sooner than a couple weeks, or I don't know. I'm stretching here. Okay. Well, the Sigma-3 Is it Sigma or Sigma?
Sigma.
Sigma 3, solar system. Federation colony is just begging for help. Who's the closest ship? Well, of course, that's the Enterprise. And it appears that from what it sounds like, that a massive fart has caused an explosion.
Was it methane-like gas, or was it even methane itself? One way or another, it didn't sound like the most horrendous thing to be exposed to.
No,
it seemed very, very grounded, right? Very grounded in 20th century kind of explanation. There was a mining operation and some gas exploded. It wasn't that they got caught up in some type of neutrino beam and all disintegrated.
No, but I was thinking about a future imperfect, a future episode we'll be doing, where all the gases that suddenly creep up in this cave, methane, hydrogen sulfide, I'm just thinking that pretty much everything in, gas, I guess you could say. But anyway, I digress on that one. The colony has 504 people. It's unclear how many are actually injured. But we're going to find out in 3.2 hours, or maybe we will. No, because Q is actually going to conduct a traffic stop on the Enterprise and search everybody and play a little game. What do you think of this game?
Well, it's first of all, I think it's nice to have Q back. It's nice that I'm a big fan of John Delancey, in particular his portrayal. I think he works as well as he can work, given the material he gets given. And over the years, I think he's going to be given a fine amount to work with. So I'm not a Q hater in that way. But I think in this particular case, and certainly having the connections to the games and then to the military games, he comes across even more Trelane-like than he did in Encounter at Farpoint. And I think I mentioned that he came across very similar to Trelane in Encounter at Farpoint, but here it's really dialed up to the max, in my opinion.
That's a pretty good analogy. Yeah, okay.
I don't know whether or not... I assume that Gene Roddenberry, when he wrote the character, he was thinking about Trelane, and in the event that he didn't think about Trelane and wrote Encounter at Farpoint, I'm sure between the pilot and this episode, someone said to him, "Hey, that cute fella, he looks a bit like Trelane, or he behaves a bit like Trelane." So I see a lot of similarities between this one and the Squire of Gothos from the original series.
Maybe after that one was filmed, he thought, if only I had thought about that, to do something in it different. I think next time we'll do it different, and he got his chance. But what about Dr. Crusher? Do you think her staff is incompetent?
Yes.
Or maybe they just, they don't really know what they're doing because, what have I got here? It says, or maybe with so much going on, they might not think that an explosion could possibly involve people who were burned or identify the most critical injured. I thought, that's called triage. Do you think the crewman that was standing next to her should go, "Thank you, doctor. I'll keep that in mind."
I think it's not necessarily just in the medical, in sickbay, right? I think it's in many places you will see the senior members of staff explaining to other people on screen that won't talk back because they're not paid to talk back, and they'll be using it as a form of exposition. But you are right, in this case, it's, you're telling medically trained professionals really the extreme basics of how to treat people that are sick and injured.
Yeah, it's a good thing she was there because they would have left their burn kits behind. Well, I guess you could say that's true. Even in real life, how many times do you know what you're doing in your job, but yet when you're told to do something, you're almost told how to do it over and over again, and you just have to accept it and go on.
So. Yeah, fair point.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. I'm jumping ahead on my next point, so I want to skip it. What do you think the whole purpose of the vicious animal things were? I didn't think they really served any purpose in the episode.
No, I don't think they did at all. I mean, are you talking about the why they were just not standard extras, or why they were there at all?
Why were they there at all? I mean, except for to put spears through Worf and Wesley. Yay!
Well, I mean, yeah, they do end up killing, they do end up killing Wesley a little bit later on, and they are, well, I mean, getting ahead of ourselves, they have to put Riker in a kind of in a position where he is threatened, whereby he has to start making these choices about whether to use the power or not. But I don't get the I don't get the reason why they're actually like full blown makeup guys. I think that seems a bit wasteful. You know, it's almost irrelevant. They're obviously not coming back again, and they put a decent, well, they put a weird makeup job on, you know, four extras to wander around in a. In French military uniforms, or whatever they are wearing.
Well, they weren't very intelligent either, because when we got a glimpse of their camp, you could see a campfire going. Do you really want the smoke to tell your enemies where you are?
No. and did you notice how I think even before? Well, I don't. Well, let me put my cards on the table here. I don't like how Riker behaves in this episode. And really, right from the start, he's being, I don't know, he's kind of undermining the captain a little bit.
You know,
he talks over the captain at Q at the beginning, and he's kind of being very kind of cocky in a way. And it's really... You know, I don't quite see where this comes from. I think it's probably a bit of a bad move. And you know, yeah, he ends up on the planet with the away team. I think at this point it's Data, Worf, Geordi, and Yar, and himself. And he seems to be going along and playing this game as if it's some piece of fun. And he's talking to Q in certain ways. And I don't know, I much, much, much prefer the interactions between Picard and Q and how, and the level that that's on, rather than the interactions between Riker and Q.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And Riker comes across as he's trying too hard to please, not necessarily to please Q, but also to have a bit of a banter with him. And it seems very fake.
Yeah. And then the second time they're back down there, and this time Picard's with them, on this whatever planet that was, with the twin moons, by the way. But you see Worf trying to take on these animal things with no weapon, and what happens? They kind of punch him in the face or something, and he falls down and it sprawls out. Like, okay, do you think he was like passed out, or he was just looking up, saying, "Okay, now go ahead, stab me now."
Well, unfortunately, I think it's the latter. I think it's all very, very clunky how this is done.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I don't think there's anything there that's particularly nicely done, unfortunately, at this point.
Okay, so when we look at Wesley with the spear in his stomach, what was your thought?
I don't hate Wesley that much. I thought all of this was really silly. I just thought the entirety of the thing was really silly.
Yeah.
I mean, so maybe we should just reiterate a bit of what the story is at this point. I mean, Riker is down on the planet. He is given the power of the Q. So he's given Q's powers in order to do things. And he ends up, sending people back. But then in order to test him, Q kind of sets up this artificial situation where, almost Riker's in a position where he's forced to use his powers so that he can save Worf and Wesley, instead of everyone walking away from these vicious animal things. He has to use the power, and Q is kind of goading him into doing that, and he does, and they end up on the ship, and well, we get this kind of moral discussion of the day, which is what do you think, how do you think you'd behave, or how would you react if you were given almost unlimited power?
Probably the same. Yeah. Probably the same. I mean, Riker goes from being the human first officer to a powerful Q in an instant. in almost in that same split second, went from what you would call the best bud on the ship, you know, your buddy who's in the command, to a complete ass. You know, he calls Picard by his first name, not once, but twice, and you can, obviously, Riker should have seen the anger that was glaring back at him from Picard when he's like, and power corrupts, absolutely. Don't you think I've thought of that, Jean-Luc? You know.
But don't you think that this is a bit too... I think it's too overdone on Riker's side. I mean, obviously, he has to read the lines, but I think he's a... You know, I think that the way that Riker turns, he turns too quickly.
Too quickly.
I think he... You know, very, very quickly, he's laughing with Q down on the planet, and you know, he comes across as extremely arrogant. He does start, you know, he walks out midway through a discussion with Picard when he's on the bridge, and I don't think you'd lose, you know, you wouldn't even lose your manners that quickly. Hmm. And we've seen instances in Star Trek before where people are given, like, they are given these powers, and things do corrupt them. I mean, you know, not least the very first episode of the original series. You're in a position where Gary Mitchell starts getting powers, and see how that affects him. And he doesn't. I mean, he turns in a much more believable way than what Riker has to do in about, you know, five or six lines. So I didn't enjoy how Riker struggles with this, and I just didn't particularly buy it. And I personally didn't really accept Picard's kind of assertion that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't to do anything because it would be too threatening. I didn't quite see why that was, you know, necessary. I'm sure you have to be aware of what you're getting yourself into, but I think if you make reasonable decisions, I don't think, you know, just having the power there to use it will immediately corrupt you entirely. And I just felt that here it was just that a lot of the moral issues were presented far too much in a binary manner.
Heavy-handed, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, and just the speed at which he goes from being a reasonable guy to being to being so arrogant and over the top is—I just didn't find it believable.
What about the other person who turned a little too quickly?
Who's that?
Tasha. I mean, she goes from a strong... I was complimenting her a few episodes ago. She's a strong female character. She's a chief of security. And at least for the first 9 episodes, she's real tough and strong. But put her in a penalty box, and boy, do her shields drop.
Actually, I specifically have this mentioned in my notes. This episode doesn't do... It is not good for Tasha, actually for two reasons. One, that she's portrayed in a very poor light. So she, you're right, she's put into a quote-unquote penalty box, which is basically being sent back to the ship and hope that no one else gets sent back to the ship, otherwise she will die, I suppose. And she then starts weeping about it, and it doesn't feel right. But also at the same time that this is going on, it's not as if there wasn't any role for her. That there was a role for her. There was a role for her down on the planet, which Worf steps into. So all of the stuff that you'd expect Tasha to do, and frankly Tasha should have been doing, you know, checking out the enemy, being there. You know, Worf has pretty good lines where he you know, quote, comes out of nowhere after Riker fires the phaser. That should have been Tasha. And I fear that they wrote Tasha out, or they wrote her off the planet because, you know, maybe that they thought that she was a girl and she wouldn't be strong enough. And I don't think that that's fair.
No. No. Oh, if you weren't a captain. You know, Picard may be a captain, but he is a man. And I assume he's fully functional, too. So, you know, you're all alone. Go ahead. I mean, oh, yeah, Q shows up and gives Picard a lashing.
I like the what's it? I like the, you know, there are a number of scenes where Q and Picard are kind of like, you know, are jousting, and you know, either they're commenting on what Riker's doing currently and whether or not things will succeed, and a lot of this stuff is actually very nice, and I think that I'm certain that had the Q, I'm about to say Q Picard, but I don't think I will. I'll say had the Patrick Stewart, John Delancey kind of interactions not worked, because I think it does come down to the actors. I'm sure that Q wouldn't have been back as often as he did come back. I think the almost if you were to ask me one of my favorite Q moments throughout the entire series, it's always his interactions with Picard and them going back and forth on each other, and even this episode, which I think is pretty poor, does have a few gems of discussion and counter discussion as Picard and Q are talking about everything.
Oh yeah, the Hamlet and Shakespeare thing.
Yeah, it's all good. Mm. It's all good.
Okay. And of course, Riker, like you said, shows his insubordination. I want a meeting with you and your bridge staff. Yeah, really? My bridge staff, number one? I mean, are they no longer our bridge staff? Riker, like you say, Riker should have seen it instantly that he was being a complete Richard here. You see how I did that, Richard?
Indeed.
Indeed. So, yeah. Okay, but you know something? You said something about Picard and Q. Do you think the story would have been enhanced or maybe better if Q had actually offered Picard the Q-ness instead of Riker?
I think, in a way, this is really a Darren with faint praise here. I don't think it could have been worse.
Yeah.
Because I do think that the way that I don't necessarily think that the problem is that it's Riker who gets given the power. I think it's how Riker is then written to behave. I certainly can't, had Picard been given the power and then Picard started behaving in that way, it would have been really, really poor. Not least is because, we touch on some issues similar to this when you get to Tapestry in Season 6. I think it might be Season 6. But, when he has the ability to go back in time and save himself from the fight with the Norsicans. And, you can see Q tempting Picard in that situation. And that's an infinitely much better episode. And I wouldn't, I wouldn't want to wish a Picard-Q kind of interaction at this stage, which then would have meant that the one that occurs in Tapestry kind of didn't have the same impact. Mm. So I don't think it's necessarily about who it was, but I think it's about how they would have been written. I think at this point I just really think that it's that Riker's written poorly once he's been given the power, and it's not necessarily that giving the power to Riker was a bad thing, but it is that it's just that he's been written poorly.
So when Riker gets the sizzle, the sizzle. All right. So 3/4 of the episode led up to what really would have been a good morality story, the B plot, I guess you could call it, or maybe it wasn't the B plot, but it should have been the A plot, the explosion and death of the little girl. Okay, now he used the power to send the crew back to the ship. Should he have saved the little girl anyway? And it's a good question, because then Picard says, you have to promise, number one, you won't use these powers. That was after he saved the crew. He lets the little girl die, and then what does Picard say? Go ahead, use your power to give these people gifts, anything you want. I think he should have just saved the little girl anyway.
I think so as well, because what happens is that he can do something good, but he's using the power, and then potentially he doesn't know how to control that power, and he starts then abusing it, which would have been a good angle. But instead, he almost he buys into Picard's idea that he shouldn't use the power, even for good, and then he becomes, he becomes arrogant, and he goes off on one anyway, and starts becoming resentful towards Picard. And I don't think that's... I don't think it's any, it's a particularly great moral story, right? I thought about using my power, I decided not to, and then I got cheesed off with my captain. So I decided to potentially join the queue and give some people some gifts on the way out. I don't quite see that as being the big moral challenge, whereas you know, had it been that he had to live through the consequences of saving the girl, which meant that he perhaps lost a little bit of himself, or he lost his ability to control certain urges, then, you know, I think that's a better balance.
Right.
And yeah, I think that would have been a better approach. So I would have, I would have saved the girl.
Oh yeah, I would have too. Okay, so the big build up to the explosion, we get all the music that heightens attention. I know I'm going back to the beginning, but it heightens attention as it, because there could be as many as 504 injured. But now we flash forward. When we finally get there, there's about 8 people, and one of them is already dead. The rest are gone. They're just gone. You know, gone how? Are dead? Vaporized? Did they leave? Did another ship come and get them and leave these people behind? Including the dead girl, maybe because nobody else had a tricorder? I mean, you know, what happened to the rest of the people? I wish the story had mentioned that. What do you mean gone?
Yeah, but also it's not, I mean, it didn't come across as the correct scale for like 504 people. It seemed very, very small fry. You know, also you have the potential here to put Riker again into a much more of a dilemma. You don't, you know, it potentially doesn't become a question of saving one person. It can become a question of saving 500 people. And I think that, you know, it's almost as if the 500 was a throwaway line right at the beginning of the episode, that then by the time they got to this point, they had forgotten. Because it's no longer important, it appears.
Right, because then they get to this point and they say, you know, we did say 504. How are we going to get ourselves out of that? I know. Let's just put in a line that says, they're gone. Easy enough. Because it makes you wonder, do you think Q is really an unfeeling bastard, or, you know, that they make him out to be? He has no compassion for people who are hurt and dying? Or did he perhaps not so much cause the explosion, but, you know, I get the impression that while the crew are dealing with the Q, it appeared that he stopped their progress to the explosion, but in reality, the ship never went off course, and you might get the impression that the rest of the ship went on with the rescue mission in real time while the bridge crew was playing this game of Qs. Does that make sense?
No, I think that does make sense. I mean... I don't actually think that Q is a bad person, but there are, unfortunately, there are episodes like this where it becomes difficult to justify what's kind of going on and see what's going on. Because here he's not, he really isn't trying to help humanity. It doesn't look like it anyway. And I think there are a couple of other cases where you have to try pretty hard to suggest that he's trying to help the crew. I've always considered Q, and certainly when we're thinking about the encounter at Farpoint, tapestry, all good things kind of encounters, I do read him very much that he's there to guide humanity through, and even things like in Q Who, I see him there as guiding humanity through whatever challenges we have, and I always see him as being someone on our side. And I like, you know, and I think that the way that he often gets portrayed as like the bad guy is the way that he's very flippant about things. And there's a very good quote in this episode where, you know, when Picard's trying to tell him that he's very interested in this idea of, you know, this huge opportunity for humanity, but we have to go and save some, you know, some dying and suffering people. And he, you know, he says, oh, your species is always suffering and dying. And I like that kind of verbal aspect of Q, but I never take it seriously. I always assume that he's been over the top for the sake of it.
I
think that they, you know, he took them off the game, he played the game, and then he dropped them back on course. I don't think he was really, you know, pulling people back,
okay,
or preventing people being rescued.
Okay, well, I mean, we can touch briefly on what it is, the gifts that Riker was going to leave everybody. Wesley was going to be 10 years older, ends up 3 times bigger than his mommy, and of course he still had his voice. Oh, that would have stunk.
Yes, and obviously it's now, we're now further in the future than 10 years, right? So we know what Will Wheaton looks like.
Right.
At 25 or, I'm sure he's now in maybe 40 or so. And he doesn't look like that guy.
You know, that's interesting because whoever played the future Will, future Wesley Crusher, he really didn't move a lot. So when they redo these on Blu-ray, which they already have, they should have somehow find Will Wheaton's present face and changed it.
Actually, I think that would have been quite cool.
Yeah, I think it would have been interesting. Yeah. Of course, you know, I'm sure Will would have wanted a little extra money on that one.
Yeah, but you can do that. That's fine.
Absolutely. Okay, so then Data was going to be human, but he didn't want to do that. Do you find that right? I mean, for some reason, he's wanted to be human all his existence. I almost said life, but existence. And now he has the opportunity. Wouldn't he at least want to experience it for a few minutes?
Yes, I would have thought so. And also, I've never been, I would have thought so, I think, because he mentions right in the pilot that he would gladly give everything up to be human.
Yeah.
Which, to me, actually, I didn't quite sit right. I'm not entirely sure why he would want to give everything up to be human, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I've always been a bit confused as to why he would want to do that. But then, certainly, when he's given the opportunity, he just spills off something about, the good thing about the journey isn't the destination, but it's the journey itself. And I didn't quite buy that. I suppose they obviously had to make sure that all of these gifts that Riker gave failed. So maybe he's just not picking up the humanity gift so that he doesn't have to be taken out of makeup or something.
That would have been interesting, but yeah, I don't know. I think they should have at least... He should have just forced it on him, and just to see what it would be like. And then he can resist it, saying, this doesn't feel right, because now he can feel, and this doesn't feel right. I want to go back. Just like Geordi. Who's next?
Yeah.
He gets real sight.
I mean, it's a bit like...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so Geordi's an interesting one, because he actually comes, he seems to really... It's kind of like a bit of a revelation for him, right? He gets to see for the first time. He gets to see everything, and he turns around to Tasha and says, you're more beautiful than I thought. And, he seemed, if anything, he was the one that I would have expected to accept the gift. So to me, I'm not entirely sure why he didn't.
Because nobody else would. I don't know if it's because Data refused it. He would look different. I mean, Wesley didn't pipe up to the end saying, this is too soon for me. But still, Data refused to do it. I don't know. Maybe... It's a good point. I mean, I've got no reason why Geordi would actually change his mind. He's looking around, he's seeing humans for the first time as they really are. And he says, she's just as beautiful as he imagined, maybe even more. But it's like, there's only one other woman on the bridge at this point. That would be Dr. Crusher. So who is he comparing that to? To draw that comparison that she's even more beautiful than he imagined. How does he know what beautiful really is, since it's the first time he's ever seen a human face for real?
No, I mean, that's true. I mean, he does get to see, right? So he gets to see people in, like, infrared, and he probably gets to see the shape, but not necessarily, like, the natural tones of what normal people would see. But also, I suppose with Geordi, probably more than with anyone else, there's pretty nothing stopping him having normal vision and also having a visor at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it never seemed to be the case that he required... It didn't seem to be the case that he needed to be blind in order to use the visor. It was almost that the visor replaced his sight because it acted as his sight because he was blind, but it didn't come across that he had to be blind in order to use it.
No, I suppose not. I mean, but he establishes in episode one that I was born this way, so we can't go back on that. But yeah, I mean, why does he have to be blind from birth to... get a visor, but that doesn't get answered. Okay.
And then I like, what's it? I like Worf. Well, what does it say about Riker that he thinks that the main thing that Worf needs is a female to come on board and to show him a good time
on the bridge.
On the bridge, absolutely. I mean, yes, yeah. Think about it. You're at your place of work, and you know someone that you work with says, "So, hey, Lou, I know what you need." Bing, and this like, you know, a female Klingon appears in front of you. You know, wants to get down to action.
Yeah, I don't want to be in HR the next morning trying to explain, but he gave it to me. I didn't ask for this. Okay. And then, of course, Wesley decides he doesn't want to be older. He'd rather get there on his own. You know, actually, what do you think about the guy who played the older Wesley? I mean, as far as a man can say, he was pretty good looking, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know why he should have stayed that way for a while. He'd have been late by 1,500 hours.
Indeed, unfortunately, on my list of things, he said, you know, Riker asks to let me gift you happiness, and it's got her. It turns Wesley into a porn star.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. It could be, but the voice. Yeah, just, I mean, I got a feeling that would turn a woman off instantly once you hear that little voice coming out of that big, strong man.
Yes, no, indeed. But maybe it takes the voice a little while to get acclimatized.
Okay. So how did you know, sir? Oh, yeah, I feel like such an ass. Yeah, so Q is defeated again. He disappears in disgrace, never to bother mankind again. Ha ha. Got my fingers crossed, by the way.
I'm not entirely sure why this convinces Riker that he's wrong about everything. You know, he seemed to be so, you know, so confident, you know, 5 minutes earlier, and he thought he knew what these people wanted, and he had unlimited power. And to be honest with you, I would have thought that if I was in that position, I'd say, "Yeah, screw you guys," and he would have just disappeared and gone to the other side of the galaxy. I don't see why this is doesn't appear to be the turning point that, you know, that Picard and Riker seem to both agree that it is.
Right. I don't know.
And did he get his powers taken away? I can't remember what...
I think that's probably the assumption. Yeah.
So, he must have lost them at some point, but I don't quite remember Q explicitly either taking them away or them, you know, disappearing or whatever.
It's an interesting point. Yeah, it doesn't really say. Okay. Well, do you have anything more? I think I'm pretty much gone to the end.
No, unfortunately, I think this is a from my mind, this is a relatively light episode in terms of interesting things to talk about. I think that on a lot of the episodes that have come up so far, even things that don't particularly work well, they've had a little bit of a nugget at their core that they've tried to explore, and this one, to the extent that it's you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, it doesn't really touch it very well, and it certainly doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem to do it to a satisfactory level, at least in my mind. So yeah, unfortunately, this is a, you know, okay. This kind of just disappears without me being that bothered.
Okay, well then, it's now time to give our final thoughts and ratings for this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being bad, 5 being terrific. I'm not sure who won, Hamlet or Shakespeare, but I know we didn't. This story is weak. The vicious animal things lent nothing to the story, as it really did nothing except for kill Wesley Crusher, and the only thing deserving to be damned to hell was that Riker brings him back to life, but chooses to allow this beautiful little girl to die. That morality question is the only saving grace of this episode, and although it was very brief, I think it can add one more point to this episode. So you'll get an idea of where I was first had thought of this episode had it not been for morality question. So I'm going to give this one a 2. James, what about you?
Okay, I'm probably in similar territory here. I don't like this one. I don't think morality tale is done well enough, to be honest. I don't think they pose the question as other episodes have done, even at this stage in The Next Generation, season one. I have to say that I do like Q's performance, and in particular his interaction, Q's interaction with Picard is always good, and there are even a few nice quotable lines that those two have. But I'm actually going to, I think I'm going to undershoot you on this one.
Okay.
I think that this isn't, I think this is probably the worst episode of Next Generation we've had, with the exception of Code of Honor. And I think Code of Honor, you can take it out and you just consider it a separate entity on its own. I think this certainly gets, this is worse than the things that we've seen recently, like Lonely Among Us and so on. And I just really wasn't interested. So I'm going to give this one a 1 out of 5.
Whew. 1 out of 5. All right.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, Counselor Troi faces a prearranged marriage.
Isn't this simply beautiful?
She's torn between love and leaving the Enterprise.
A starship has its customs just as we do.
But when the groom risks his life to help a plague-infested ship,
my son surrounded by those horrible lepers,
he threatens to destroy their future on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Join us next week as we review Season 1, Episode 11, Haven. I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Omaha. Take care, and good night. Data's not the only android still thinking of you, Baker. Good night. No, that's true, I can't stop thinking about him, actually.